Hallo und herzlich willkommen, lieber Hörer. Das ist dein Daily of the Month. Der Aachener Podcast über Zusammenarbeit für agile Organisationen. Great, so no one had an idea for an intro.
Okay, let's do it.
Is that your ego now talking?
Who am I?
And who is this Egon guy? I mean, really.
Good evening and welcome to episode 9 of Daily of the Month, Authentish. Tonight, we're going to be taking a wild journey from ego to echo and back. And that's right, you're hearing me correctly. Sometimes I have to ask myself, am I speaking German or English, or what am I understanding? Tonight, we will be speaking English. My lovely colleagues have offered, and I thank them very much, to switch over and speak English tonight. So we are talking about the topic of being authentic, and sometimes it's a stretch for me to go into a foreign language and be myself. So tonight, the stretch is for Chris and Marcus. Thank you, guys. And good luck.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I think we'll need it. Yeah, okay. If anyone likes to play a game, he can count all my spelling errors. That will be okay.
Don't worry about your spelling errors today.
Yeah. I will be authentic German, and I think Marcus put it quite nicely in our planning meeting beforehand when he said, yeah, you guys, you know what the most spoken language in the world is? And the answer is, Marcus?
Broken English.
There you go. And we will deliver that 100%. Okay. Let me just quickly build a bridge from the last episode to this one. Last time at episode 8, we were talking to social group workers. And in one chapter, they described how they are working with individuals that had like bad experiences with groups. Example being something like mobbing or violence or addiction, and how this leads then to people withdrawing from group situations, so like pupils refusing to go to school anymore. And interesting thing was, beside their intent to work on making them feel okay again with group, so like arranging a, you could say, acclimatization for groups, they explained how they help them to personally evolve their character by the means of group working. So that we found really, really interesting, how the group, let's call it your personal ecosystem, helps their clients to reflect their own character or personality, and that we will now, for this episode, call ego. So this really leads us to the two main players of this episode, our two imaginary guests in this episode. And this explains also the subtitle that Joshua just mentioned, From Ego to Echo and Back. So we're like discussing, if you will, the inner world of a person and the outer world. And just one thing before we dive into the topic, we have a little musical gameplay, you could say. Guys listening, or guys and ladies that listen to our podcast know that we are a lot of times talking about music, asking our guests for additions to our Spotify playlist. And this time we will try to use the update in our playlist in our conversation. So I'm pretty excited how this will work out. Okay. That's from my side. Let's dive into the next part.
All right. So let's start from the beginning, from ego to eco. So what's ego? So what would you say ego is?
Yes.
Chris?
So where do I start? I mean, I was reading a lot, was just having vacation time and like trying to get this answer straight for me. It's really a huge topic. But I think the most essential part is that an ego of a person is how he separates from other people. So that is like the basic core, I think, from ego. So I'm this in contrast to others. I would give this as a first explanation try. What do you think?
Okay.
For me, I think it is, yeah, I think along similar lines. I think that my ego is what separates me from the group, or what I understand myself to be separate from the world around me. And I think that might be an interesting perspective that's kind of adding to what you've just said, Chris, is that I believe that the ego is, maybe when I look into someone's eyes, I'm trying to translate what they are seeing when they look into me. So my ego is actually me juxtapositioning myself into the eyes of somebody else and trying to understand what makes me different.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so do I understand it right? The ego is what's inside me? So all the things the others don't know about me? Or is it everything which I also show to the others?
I would maybe go along this line that it's even to know that it's me. So having a consciousness for myself. And I think if we go to looking at the site, where does it come from? I think babies, toddlers, when they start to make a connection to a specific word and their self. So if someone says Chris, that I know Chris is related to me. And then the next step would be that I'm formulating things like, this is mine, or I want something. The first time I use I or me or mine, that's the first start of the ego. That would be my attempt.
Another question, is the ego only what you are, or is it also what you think you should be? Like all these dogmas and all these things, how you think the others expect you to be. So is it your pure self, or is it this what you think you should be?
Yeah, I think it has to do with identity and how I identify myself. So these are maybe the things to identity would be the ideas, the memories, the stories that I tie to myself. And that would be connected to maybe also, I think what you're describing, Marcus, would be the roles. And that could be the roles that maybe I feel that the group or society is wanting me to fulfill. And I think that that becomes one of our life's journey, is to actually ask ourselves the question, what am I here to do? And I think that that's a question that we will continue throughout our whole lives to try to answer. That so then we will ask ourselves, is this me right now trying to fit in to a role that is expected of me, or is this actually myself? And that's the question of being authentic. Yeah.
And is there only one ego, and that's it, or is you said it's developing? That means, is the ego changing? So.
I guess so, yeah. But it's really the question how I define it. So I think it's still me. It's still being conscious, but what does make my character is changing all of the time. I mean, there are core assets, but there are also things, needs that will change over time. I'm pretty sure.
And I think, yeah, there's this idea of me now in this moment, and there's potential me. So I believe that, like, you know, like the river, or, and I think we'll be definitely touching on psychology, philosophy, and probably spirituality, ideas of from Buddhism and being in the river, that it's constantly flowing and moving. So there's the potential me is what I'm always changing, transforming into.
Okay, guys, so we have a shared concept of what is ego or what we mean by ego, but now I would really like to dive into the part where we talk about how we can explore our ego. So I wanted to raise the question, what do you think is a good method for exploring your planet ego?
For me, I think that one of the methods that kind of has gotten my attention in the last time is called, Theory U. It's a method from Otto Sharma, and it's talking about a transformation phase. I think what I think for me, exploring the planet ego has a lot to do with being curious, and curiosity will then... it focuses my awareness. So there's a curiosity to know, okay, what's going on inside of me right now? Why am I reacting like that? Is those looking for patterns, so specifically inside myself? And it also has the awareness is not has to be, doesn't have to always be focus, but it could be just like an open and listening. It's maybe like pretty simple, and we've always heard it, but listening is really important. So it's listening to my body, listening to the signs it's giving me, listening to my environment. So those are kind of the ways: being curious, being aware, and listening are the ways that I would do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Marcus.
One thing I did is I found a book from Susan Cain. It's called Quiet, and I learned a lot about myself. Susan Cain is writing about character trait. So psychologists talk a lot about different character traits, and she is focusing on the spectrum. Where are you on the spectrum of introverted towards extroverted? So that is one trait. For example, the psychologist Carl Jung was describing as quite characteristic for your personality. And in her book Quiet, she describes a lot of different behaviors which could be associated to this spectrum introverted extroverted. For example, how you react on external triggers, like people which tend more on the introverted spectrum, they reflect more on the external triggers. So when an introverted person is in a party, the person might feel overwhelmed because there are so many triggers. Another aspect would be what you consider as a reward. So whether you're more focusing on external rewards, like some status symbols, or whether you are more reacting towards internal values. That's this kind of intrinsic motivation. And she's describing a lot of this kind of aspects. Mm. And that I use to look at myself. How do I behave? How do I feel when I'm at a cocktail party or in a company? Mm. What motivates me? And there I learned a lot about myself.
Mm. Yeah, this also the book Susan Cain was in my travel case on holidays. So I can agree or really step on your boat because I also had my share of time on getting involved with some series and models, psychological models, where you have the possibility to think about yourself and maybe positioning your character traits on a given set. And Susan Cain was the one book I took. And besides this, asking myself, where do I see myself on the introvert or extrovert part, I really learned a lot also about don't let yourself fool you from common judgment on specific character traits like introversion, because our society is very built on extrovert people. And I think it also, this getting to know yourself has a lot to do with accepting or even more embracing what you find in your treasure box. And introversion is not a lack of social skills. It's not an illness, but it shows also a big potential. And but besides Susan Cain, I wanted to bring some other model in the discussion that I was recommended by a friend. It's from Fritz Riemann, and he has also a model for positioning people in a way. Sounds kind of hard, right? This putting people in drawers. That would be also a question I would make up now. So Susan Cain has like a model or an axis, intro or extrovert. Why do you think this is a good thing to ask yourself where you or other people are on this axis?
Well, for me, it helped to reflect and to get some ideas how I could observe myself, some kind of categories. And I see that as a value that I can look at myself in a more specific way, that I get examples. Mm-hmm. That is the advantage I see. The disadvantage or the danger I see is that what you said, putting a label on a person, like putting saying, well, this person is like that. And in Susan Cain's book, it really becomes clear that a person is not introverted or extroverted, but you only have some behaviors which you could associate to introverted or extroverted behavior. And I think that's with all those psychological models, that they help, for me, they help to analyze, but they have they take the risk to to have a prejudice that you see a certain behavior and then you put that person in the category and say, well, this person will always behave like that.
And I think I now recall a movie quote from Shrek. So ogres, and I would say humans as well, are like onions. And the quote from the donkey would be, they stink. And then Shrek says, no, they have layers. So I would also say, if I look at myself, so being asking myself about the axis that Susan Cain makes up, there's definitely an introvert layer paired with a big need for interaction with others to create, like in this very joyful podcast with you guys. And so I know I'm really dependent on sparing partners, but also there's introvert need. And one vocabulary thing to take the last part on Susan Cain, I really also liked that she's putting away the label of just calling someone introverted or shy or something, but saying these people are more reactive and they have like a smaller battery for social interactions and they need to recharge more often than a person that you would put more at the side of an extrovert. Okay, so maybe just a small last model from me that I found something interesting, very interesting for me to reflect on, a classical one from psychology, Fritz Riemann, and his basic forms of anxiety. And to in short form, his theory is based on four forms of anxiety: an anxiety of distance, proximity, change, and permanence, I would say. And he mostly says that we all deal with these four kinds of fears to a certain degree. if the degree is too high in one direction, this might become even a problem for you or a clinical situation. But it's normal that we are all triggered by these anxieties all of our life. And this also goes back way to our deep history, or when we just said in the beginning that ego starts when you are a toddler and starting to, the first time you say I or mine. So it's something that is very subconscious. And I like the theory, and I will give more detail in the show notes, because talking about fear, when you reflect on yourself, I don't see it as such a common topic, because normally we humans try to avoid things that we are afraid of, or they are very deeply hidden in our subconsciousness. You think of anxiety as something bad, like your Achilles heel, or how would you experience this?
Yeah, I think that fear is definitely a big factor, or it has a lot of weight in our lives, and it will drive us to make certain kinds of decisions. And so I think that it would be important aspect to wonder into, okay, what am I afraid of? What is that? How does that limit the decisions that I'm making in my life? And what if I would look at that from a different perspective? Would that change my action or my agency in the world? I did want to maybe come back. I think that you did ask a question also to Marcus, and I didn't. I'd like to also respond. You asked about the spectrum, and is that a good thing? And I think that maybe giving a model is a good thing, and maybe we can see, okay, these are the characteristics of this spectrum. I think one of the dangers could be that we naturally always compare ourselves to other people. And I think that we can definitely get obsessed with that. So we live our lives being in comparison where we are with how much money we have, or where we are in the development of our career, or I don't know, if I'm doing some kind of sport, that he is better than me, or he can do this way better than I. And I think that there misses that appreciation for where I am in my development. So I think that that could give you reference, and maybe when you use a model, but it also could lead to over-analysis and putting yourself in constant comparison with other people.
Yeah. But I think this also fitting a bit to what you just said, it was like a demand for balance, I heard from your words. And this is also something that I saw in Riemann's book. So he's describing these fears are also a good thing. And if we talk about ego, there are two. There's always antagonistic pairs. And the one pair is that fear of distance and proximity. And so the fear of proximity, it's really this pledge for becoming a unique individual and opting for selfhood and distinguishing against others to be a distinctive personality. And but this alone can make you sick, but you have to balance this out with the other demand that you should also open up to the world and step in contact with the not me. And so to have this measure, this balance of these fears is the optimal state, if I understand him right. And I would also think that this sounds healthy to me. So yeah, this was a really nice space trip for me to visit my planet Ego to digest the series of Susan Cain and also from Fritz Riemann. And it also fit quite nicely to our headline, Exploring Planet Ego. And there's this one song that I wanted to add to the playlist from the band Monster Magnet. It's called Ego, the Living Planet. Also a nice Easter egg for all Marvel and Star-Lord fans. And there's this only text line, I talk to planets, baby. And yeah, a bit later, there's a lot of screaming going on. So this also fits to this anxiety topic of Fritz Riemann. So have a listen, guys. That's, yeah, it's maybe not for everyone, but it fits very good to our topic. Yeah.
I also want to bring in my song. I've chosen the song One from U2. And what I found really interesting is the line, we are one, but we are not the same. We have to carry each other. And I got this reminder to this song when you said of a balance of different aspects of your character trait. And I think all those traits, being it introverted, extroverted, or whether you're more inward or outward, that's inside all of us. And depending on which side you are, you're reacting in a different way. But in the end, it's what U2 says, this kind of, we are one. And in the end, we all have the same way how we work. One is more on this side of the spectrum, one or the other. But in the end, every human being is ticking in the same way.
Yeah, so you guys now made up a lot of question marks as I experienced on my side. So I think beside of these different theories or models or systems where I could say, okay, I'm in this corner, that corner, whatever, that could be also a measure to experience my ego, to just ask questions. And I just heard questions from you. So the first question would be, what motivates me or what demotivates me? And I think this would be also a good measure to be more self-aware.
Even more, we talked about it when we talked about introversion and extroversion, that introversion is not looked well at. So, but when an introverted person identifies, oh, I'm more on the introverted side, and that's also what Susan Cain is writing a lot, that a lot of introverted persons notice that they are not seen positively, so they try to be someone else, but then they are not really motivated in what they are doing, because they are acting out of their own ego, out of their own character. And then identifying, well, this is me, and this is how I'm working, and this is how I'm ticking. That is, I think I'm convinced that brings me to some point where I'm motivated, where I'm, when I can act in my natural way. And I think it's pretty much demotivating if you're trying to pretend to do something out of your role, but you expect it. In companies, introverted people hear a lot of, oh, you should be more outgoing. Yeah, try to be outgoing. Okay, you can tell an extroverted person, try to be more introverted. Could you please next week be a bit more introverted? And
yeah, please just shut the hell. Oh, sorry. No cursing on the podcast. I'm sorry. Yeah. I would sometimes like to say,
that's this term of intrinsic motivation. This kind of, that comes out of me, and that comes out of my ego.
Yeah, but maybe it's also a bit building a bridge between this intro and extroverted people. And this chapter I also found very interesting, because mostly in groups, you have not a homogenic group of introverted or extroverted people. You have mostly a mix. Or if you are in a family like me, you have children and maybe you are extroverted and one of your children is introverted. And then it's also a good thing to realize that maybe the other person is just, it's not wrong, it's ticking somehow different. And another thing, you said that there are like demands for people, you should be this or that. But I think it's not very popular, the thought that maybe for some people, for this introverted people, it needs a certain amount of quietness and privacy to bring peak performances to the table. And if they don't get it, they won't achieve these things. And I mean, she gives a lot of examples from like very popular persons, like this one Apple person. Please help me out. Steve Wozniak, who was very much introverted. And if he hadn't had the chance to live introverted and work with a lot of privacy, he might not accomplish something big like Apple. Or another example, the Rosa Parks example, and she has like plenty examples of people being introverted and like doing this great things. And I think nevertheless, this knowledge that quietness and privacy can be also a big booster for achieving great things. This is not really common knowledge. It's all about you have to be a team player and everything for the team and so on and so on. But quietness and privacy also can be a big boost.
I think that we're putting a lot of tension on being introverted and extroverted, and I think that that's okay. I'm going to pull it back just a second. I'm going to say, I think that I see those two traits or questions here are kind of like, we're saying that if someone, I am recognizing where I am on a scale or I what I am personally. And I think that we're talking about self-awareness. So I think you could use maybe different traits besides just introverted and extroverted. Yeah. And we're talking about maybe what is demands are being put on us or what is expected of us to be in our certain roles. And I think that that might take away from our agency in the world. So our ability to act because we're not in line with ourselves. And so we're talking about being self-aware. So this is part of just realizing what that is. And then somehow there has to be this connection to standing up for who you are and being that to be okay. Mm-hmm. And we use that as, okay, I feel pressure that I'm supposed to be some way. I am not that way. And so I think in this realization of that's important for me to be like myself, mm-hmm. I might be will also provoke me to be more empathetic to how other people need to be or are to be authentic.
Okay.
Yeah, but what does that help me now? Because when I want to be in a certain role, like I want to work in a team, in a company which has a certain aim, a certain task, and certain role descriptions, and there are certain expectations on how the person should behave, should be in that role, in that specific environment. And what if I don't fit in there? Is it like you need specific people to then work together in a team? Or how is it working that I'm a good team member with my ego, how it is constructed with all the different traits which I might find out about myself?
Yeah, I mean, you have then the possibility to explain what you need to do good work. And then speak that freely and arrange a working situation with everyone else, how everyone in the ideal way can work at its best. But I'm thinking that we're now moving ahead too far, because we are still on Planet Ego, and I would like to take it a bit back. I found it very interesting, the question, but I would go and answer it a bit later on in the next chapter when we talk about the ego-eco connection. We had this one question that we wanted to explore as well, and this comes a bit from our Rosenberg history and having a big Rosenberg fan in our blog. So we had this episode on Rosenberg and nonviolent communication, and in our planning we ask ourselves, so Rosenberg talks a lot about needs and feelings. So how can I explore my personal needs and feelings? That will be my open question for exploring Planet Ego. Give me a measure.
Yeah, I think talking about needs and feelings, it's a bit different world compared to character traits. I think this goes more into the direction of what is going on inside me. What do I... Well, feelings is something humans can... humans explore the world through feelings. So you can anytime just... rest in yourself and look into yourself and see, well, what am I feeling here? Because that's how we experience the world. And then what is triggering the feelings? Well, you have some basic needs, and when they're fulfilled, you have feelings which you would consider as pleasant, and when your needs are not fulfilled, you experience them as not pleasant. And then we are coming to the character traits, and I think that is depending on where you are in the scale of different character traits, you have focus on specific needs in specific situations. I think that is then the connection. But then exploring yourself is more listening to your body, to your feelings, and not analyzing, well, how did I react in this situation? What did that mean? Well, am I now more introverted or extroverted? But I'm in a certain situation. What does that make? What does that do to me? I don't know. I go to a party, and when I'm an introverted person, I might feel uncomfortable. I might feel overwhelmed with all the triggers. Then I wouldn't see, well, I'm introverted, but I will see, well, I'm overwhelmed.
So I think that, Marcus, you put out a good point in use of vocabulary. I think one of the parts for us to reflect or to realize, to explore our feelings, is to actually have the vocabulary to do that. And I still have printed out a list of emotions so that I can, what is that I'm feeling, and be able to identify that with words. I think for me, that was important, and it still remains important for me to identify those.
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting, because we are not very trained to listen to our feelings and express them. Most people just know, how do you feel? Oh, good. Yeah. And I think it comes from we are used to judging and putting labels, like, oh, this is a very shy person, or this is an extrovert person, or I think we tend to think in those categories, in those measures, and that's how we often just label people oh, that you're at a party and there's this person not saying a lot. And so, okay, he's shy. instead of, what is this person feeling at the moment? Maybe the person is just feeling overwhelmed. And we're not used to that. And the first thing of exploring your ego from that term is to practice feeling what's going on in your body. Where do you actually feel the sensation? And even anxiety or being overwhelmed, you feel it somewhere in the body if you really pay the attention. And then expressing that is even more unusual. We often don't have the words because we're not used to them.
And I think also this, language would be the key factor, right? So, and there starts a problem because talking feelings, it's like it has not a good view. So it for many people appears like, oh, talking feelings, it's like this yogi guy. But I agree that would be really helpful to talk about feelings, and many people don't have the vocabulary. If you ask them, so what was your feeling in that situation? If you look for a conflict situation and try to recap, so what was, where did the train leave the tracks? And then ask, so what was the feeling? What was your need? And I think many people, if you start with them that conversation, they will be very puzzled. So what do you want to know? What my feelings? I don't know. So I think this is something that you really have to train. And many people, we need to learn a set of vocabulary. We were not raised like that. That's really a problem.
And it makes a big difference in exploring your ego, because let's take this example. You're at the party and someone asks you, why are you so quiet? And when you then answer, well, I'm quiet because I'm introverted, doesn't really help that much. But when you say, well, I'm quiet because I'm stressed with all the triggers I get here, and I need more depth and connection to people, and not just some superfluid and all super some talking at the surface. So that's something different than that's what you can explore when you look at your feelings and your needs. So what do I really need? And then you're not thinking in categories of labels and character traits. Okay. But
yeah, I see.
So I think one thing we kind of are touching on right now is we need to practice certain things. And so I'd put this question out to you guys. What kinds of things or what kind of practices do you guys do to know yourselves?
I learned a lot about myself through yoga and meditation. Being with myself and listening to what's going on, that's an aspect for me.
You know, I have this podcast and I talk to two guys sometimes about topics.
I think that's another practice to exchange, to get in connection with others and to express yourself and to learn what do the others see and to get feedback, to observe and to do that with others. Yeah?
And maybe a really basic measure, just having time on your own with no distraction. I mean, this getting quite rare in these times, right? You always have your cell phone, you're always in contact with people. And like, you think of people like, this is another example of Susan Cain, Charles Darwin, who took like on a regular basis a long walk through the woods on his own, to just have being alone with his thoughts helped him to be more aware. I think this also could be a measure.
Yeah, and also letting go of all those external triggers, because that helps me to define myself through my ego, not through all those triggers. When I'm constantly with loud music, and then that's my world. But when I'm just with myself, and that's for me meditation. To shield off all the different triggers, and then just have my ego, and that's it.
Okay, let me be the party crasher now. Just said that being on your own is a good thing. I like to take the step in the next part. Ego meets the others. So let's talk about that. What do you think, Joshua?
So, Marcus, yeah, I think that, I mean, you asked a really good question. And I think that I've been asking myself this same question a lot. And I think it was actually really triggered by Andreas when we had a talk about him and the rudiments. He said, well, we have to put our ego away to be in a team. And I'm thinking about, okay, but how can I be with myself and still be a good team member? So it's kind of along the same lines as what the question you asked. So I think for me, I'll just give a picture first. I think that's like the picture of our body, and we are made up of, you know, thousands and thousands of cells, and each cell is individual and knows what it needs to do and does that, and it is in cooperation with all the other cells that it creates, you know, me. So I think in some way I need to, there's also, I think, this idea that in a team, things need to be harmonious for it to be a good team. And I think that is actually a myth that I've held on to for a long time. And I think that actually this friction, and the friction maybe comes from knowing what you need. And if someone is, in the moment, they want to approach their needs or wants, and that is going against my needs. If I'm able to communicate that, that's where we come into finding new solutions, or realizing also what is the other feeling, what is the other needs are, and how can we combine those?
Are you now saying that it's possible that in a team, people work together, but they are still following their own ego?
I think it's important to be rooted in your own ego, your own sense of yourself, to be effective, and to be able to honor yourself, and by doing that, you become a more you can become more active part of a team, and give more input, I think, to the direction, and to bring, I mean, if we know all groups where two people kind of just take over the group and they ask for maybe opinions, but no one says anything, and they just kind of want to go with the flow, and maybe that's what they need in that time. But I think there might be a challenge to say, okay, well, are you just going with the flow because you want no friction, or are you sacrificing part of yourself?
So sacrificing a part of yourself, meaning bending and not acting to your own character, to your own ego.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that being in a relationship, or so I could use it on just between two people, you know, if I'm in a romantic relationship, I know that I am entering into that relationship. That relationship will transform who I am. just by the means of two people being together. So it's not, I'm not talking about being myself as this structured, static being. I'm talking about, I don't know exactly. I think that I know that I will be transforming, and this interaction, if it's a group or a team, will change me in some way and give me reflection more to also who I am in certain situations. Because I think there is Josh that works at work. There's Josh in family. There's Josh in, in all different contexts. Josh Daily of the Month. So,
Yeah, realizing that I'm special with special needs and special feelings, special anxieties, etc., makes me also aware that the others are also different. So it's really accepting the diversion. No. What's the right term?
A diversity or
diversity. That's it, right? And that would be my big question. Also, coming back to the work situation, if we just go, you gave now many examples of like at the family in a romantic relation. I would be also interesting to focus on. Can I be me? Can I be authentic at work? So like Riemann said, what we talked before, that that you need both. You have to protect your ego, if you will, but you also have to open up for your ecosystem. We need this balance. But I also, I don't know, that I get the feeling that sometimes the people are tending more to this open up or aligning to the team, and think that it could be worthwhile to get more authentic people at work. So I'm also seeing it, like you said, that you differ your behavior or your role depending on the group, depending on the context. And I think in some way it is very natural. So I naturally act different as a father and in my job and here in the podcast. It's a given thing, I think. But is it really necessary to do something like an artificial role play? Or can I really align this nicely so that I have something, if we now try to think of it like a theater, and I'm an actor, so I'm following the rules of the director and the script precisely, or do I more do something like method acting? So I'm being that person. I'm being a person and taking something from me and bring it to the stage, and then I can act out in different situations in different place even. But you, Markus, said something like faking, so just artificial role play, and I think this is heading for disaster and running with scissors. And this situation, I really find quite good, coined by another song that I wanted to give into this episode, from this one singer-songwriter from Germany, Spaceman Spiff, which now changed his name to his real person name, Hannes Wittmer. And the song Scherenhände begins with this line: jetzt stehe ich hier wie die Axt im Wald und wollte auch eigentlich ein Baum sein. So now I'm standing here like an axe in the wood, but originally I wanted to be a tree. So he's not feeling right in his character. There's something odd in the situation. And he's not doing what he's supposed to do.
Is it being pushed into this situation by the environment?
I don't know. It's not me putting on the song. Would be interesting to ask him himself one time. But and this song I really like so much. There's so much interesting lines. Further down the line, he says, "As long as nobody asks, this is my face for today." So it's I had so much relation with our topic, and this all came to me to this artificial role play and people acting in a role because they think they're it's demanded to be that way, and completely forgetting about their ego, bending too much, like you said, Marcos. And this I think is a problem.
Yeah, I like this picture of this axe in the forest, because a lot of the friction and a lot of stress and a lot of unpleasant experiences in our work environments is coming from people acting in a non-natural way towards their character traits, and because they are expected to be, or they're in a the entire environment is acting in some expected way, or some way how it always was, and no one is really looking at, well, how would I act in my natural being, and what would I need for that, and how would I be able to arrange with the others to be able to act like that. Yeah, we were talking about actors and expressing themselves in their way, but how does the play, the story come into place when everyone is acting in their own way? How can you arrange yourself with the others that their needs are fulfilled and your needs are fulfilled, but you still have a common aim and a common way of working?
I think that has a lot to do with the setting. And I think that some people would definitely not be themselves for fear of opening up. For fear. Yes, this is anxiety. But I think it also, I don't know if it's like the chicken and the egg. What comes first? Is it the feeling of trust, or is it the feeling of fear? Or if they're just two sides of the same coin, I'm not sure. But I think that, so I talked to a guy, he's developing an app for teams to use so they can measure their emotional intelligence of a group. And he said he's kind of through research boiled it down to two key parts, or the most important parts for a team, is for someone to be in a team, for it to be successful, would be safety and the feeling of belonging. So I think that safety definitely has to is there. On if I'm willing to open up, if I don't feel safe, I'm probably not going to open up. And I mean, I think that that's in the past that has been organizations or where we've been working hasn't been accepting of who people are. And I think that that's kind of what we're trying to do with this podcast. I think that a lot of other people are working on this issue of how do we kind of change the way that we've been working together? How do we organize? How can I be myself and make a big contribution to a team and organization and do something that's meaningful in life?
A nice word, meaningful. Is that what your ego is about, that you have a meaning for yourself?
I'm not so sure. I just thought of what Joshua said. I thought about this dealing with vulnerability. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going the extra mile. Okay. And even I recall from our last podcast that also the social group workers were talking about that there's always in the first stages of a group forming, there's so much fear of vulnerability. vulnerability. So
the fear of being hurt. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Social judgment. I mean, shyness. I think it's defined by a fear of social judgment. Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. So I'm not talking out loud because the others could think I'm stupid or something. So to just talk into the internet via podcast, that's a big step.
Yeah, but come on, go to a job interview and then express to the interviewer that okay, my character trait is I'm really shy. Forget about this job.
Yeah,
right? But
I think okay, that's really nice. I think you took it also to the next level. So let us really talk about tolerance and acceptance because for this authentic behavior. I mean, I was just talking about theater play, and so authentic. That's really a big value. So this actor is really authentic. I believe him, and people sitting there and really thinking this evil guy, he's really evil, and I'm really scared of him. So that's really the biggest value that an actor can get, I think. And I think in work situation, it's not always like this. I really have the impression that sometimes there are some popular stereotypes or negative stereotypes that are not so much accepted or tolerated. Like you have the critic in the team, the heckler, the quiet one, the slow one, the big mouth. And I'm not sure if everyone is so open-minded about, okay, he should be like he feels. And I also think that sometimes the acceptance also changes depending on hierarchy. So a boss is like that, get used to it. But here, this guy, call him Fritz, he should be open up more or be more going out or something. And why is that? Or do you see it like that? Am I the only one?
Well, I think it's about how you get along in the team. When you look at certain stereotypes, that's just some labels, how you see the other person. And when you see the boss being in this bossy way, you know how boss is, right? And that's not why he is acting like that. That's not his character. That's the label you put on him. And then looking at the ego of that person, why is that person acting like this? I think he's a loud mouth or big mouth or he's a critic. He's always criticizing. But what makes people understand each other and seeing the ego behind that label?
Or the need.
What's behind there? The need would be one aspect you could look at.
Yeah.
And I think we often just stop at these labels, at these stereotypes. He's the boss and he's the critic and he is like that. And
I think that on the other side, there's like those are labels. One belief that I've held on to for a really long time is it was like this idea: okay, people are people, and if they're going to make those decisions, then okay. And I kind of shied away from challenging these people. And I think that, but I believe that, even though it's really difficult and I don't find myself to be maybe a good at giving feedback, I think part of coming together to be in a team or an organization is the sharing of knowledge. And I think that maybe some people wouldn't even realize how they come across to other people in the group. And so actually there's maybe an accepted of authentic, but maybe there's still the challenge of being able to question someone's intentions or their what's behind their actions, or maybe reflecting back to someone how they would come across if they are making certain decisions, or to say, well, I think of it like this. How would you see it? Or how does that work with your worldview or the situation? So I think that there's an acceptance, and there's maybe a fine line between accepted and friction that would maybe be a challenge to, you know, come up with new meaning.
And I mean, beside acceptance, would be also a system question. So again, Susan Cain in her book, she speaks about that companies should arrange conditions where people are free to have the choice of the level of interactions. If they now need the personal area where they can have a retreat to concentrate and just be on their own to fix their problem they are right now working on, and beside there also the places to interact and like the cafes and whatever to meet and connect with others, but giving the persons the freedom to act in the way that they need. So this, I think this is a really good demand. But we can also maybe talk about the extreme opposite of that. I mean, I don't see us really pledging for everyone just do whatever they want to do, right?
Well, that's this basic question. Is it possible for a team to find one strategy, so one of way of doing things, and with looking at all the different characters and needs which are behind the people,
how to align, how to flow together?
That's the question. How does the team achieve that? Because otherwise, it's just a group of individuals which act according to whatever they think they should do now. I think now we are talking a lot about communication. So how do people interact with each other, and how do people recognize each other's ego and each other's character and, well, each other's needs?
And maybe giving a meta vision or what is this goal? I think that I mean, Maslow, everybody knows his pyramid of needs, and towards the end of his life, he came up with not self-awareness as being the top of the top of the pyramid. He said that self-transcendence is the goal, kind of the top need to fulfill. And I mean, that what is that? I think one of the easiest, he has like 20 different ways that he would describe transcendence. One that kind of hit me is that is the giving of one's own self to a higher goal. I think so. If we're giving ourselves to this organization or this group, that we are hoping that we will reach something bigger than ourselves. And I think that that's, we try to be ourselves, but we also try to be, we're hoping to be in situations where other people are giving of themselves to higher goals as well.
What does that mean? Does that mean I better give up my ego to fit into a team? Do you think it's meant like that, or?
I think it's going I mean, that is a question that is has been part of me for a while. Is it, how do I get to eco? How do I get to that? Can I go through my ego, or do I have to give my ego away? And I believe that you can go through yourself and be true to yourself and still be true to a higher goal.
Marcus, I just thought about the one thing that you said in our preparation meeting. It's really Susan Cain in this episode a lot. I'm sorry to say. No, I'm not sorry to say, because I think she really great thoughts. But I mean, she's also that example of she is calling herself an introvert as well, and she's like doing this lectures and speeches. And you also gave me an explanation that there are certain conditions or situations where you can, somehow step out of your natural body a bit.
Well, that's this this example Susan Cain has of a person who is following, she calls it a personal core project, which is really meaningful for that person, and being able to step out of your natural character in that area where you really believe in and where you see a meaning, where you're burning for. And maybe that is, Joshua, what you call transcending this kind of finding, where you are good at and where you see a meaning, and there you can actually go beyond natural character. She had an example of a professor who was really introverted, so meaning that he was really reflecting a lot and taking in a lot of triggers around himself. So whenever he was in a big group, he was so overwhelmed with all the triggers that he knew, okay, he needed to withdraw and take a break. But he was known to be the best lecturer of the university, because that was his, that's what he was burning for. So he was acting extremely extroverted. So he was known for his lively and surprising lectures. But afterwards, he had to withdraw to be alone in order to recharge his batteries. So he was, when he was at conferences, he was always puzzled, because after his lectures, which were he gave this keynote speeches, and afterwards he was often invited for lunch and for talks, and he was always fleeing because he knew he would be so exhausted after his keynote speech that he needs a rest. So he was still acting in his actual ego. So he was not giving up and doing something totally different, but he was still true to himself in knowing, I can give a keynote speech, but I have to take a break afterwards, and I won't join the people for lunch because I know I will be overwhelmed with all the triggers, and I have to recharge.
Yeah, it's even a different case. I mean, the one thing is holding a lecture on your own terms, and the other thing, the complete free interaction at a dinner table. And this,
not really. When giving a lecture, he was playing with the people, and he was really alive and kicking and involving the people. So that was what he was known for. And no one would, when you would see him in this lecture, you would never assume that he would be introverted.
Yeah. Okay, so you now have these examples of, like, if you have purposeful jobs or actions where you see the higher purpose, so you go beyond your comfort zone, you could say. But what about boundaries? So there's some authentic behavior that is maybe, yeah, problem for others. So there has to be some boundaries, right? And who should or who does normally define these boundaries for being authentic so that we don't have just chaos?
I think there starts the problem. I think the boundaries are mostly created from outside. So there's an organization, and the organization is defining how the boundaries look like. And I think agile is the step towards that. The people in the team are supposed to define their boundaries in how they interact and how they do things. That's my interpretation of agile ways of working. That, or my interpretation of self-organizing teams. That those boundaries are defined interactively by the people which are affected, and not by someone who is planning the organization and saying, "Well, we need this and this characters for programmers. We need those introverted guys because they are capable of concentrated work. And for a manager, we need this and this type because we need him to be in this and this way." And then in your personal talk, you will be told, okay, you should be more like this because your role description is like that. I think that's the pre-agile ways of working, and I think agile is, for my understanding, supposed to take a mind shift there.
Marcus, I think you make a good point. I believe that we've internalized a lot of our own boundaries since we've been children, and maybe they're running as background programs that we're not always conscious about. So some of the decisions that we make in our lives are based on patterns that we've seen in our surroundings throughout our whole life. And you could argue that they are external because they came from our environment. But I would believe that they become a part of your internal running system. And that is partly, I think, part of the practice of becoming self-aware is to be able to question, okay, where does this belief come from that I have? Is that doing me good, or is it holding me back from reaching other heights or doing other things that I didn't think were possible?
I totally agree. And I think being aware of your boundaries, where do they come from, and what is hindering you, or what would you actually need in order to cross those boundaries, so which boundaries are disturbing. Recognizing that's the first step. But then the next step is to be able to do something. And I think in a very hierarchical and defined organizational form, your possibilities in changing something are much smaller than in an agile environment where you can interact with your peers, with those ones which are self-organizing, which can have an impact on, okay, we are a team of 8 people and this person needs this, this person needs that. What strategy could we find that everyone's needs are met? And do we have the possibility to implement those strategies?
And then we would be in the corner of working agreements, I think. And this is a thought I just got when I listened to your words. That is kind of missing from my reading of things like the Scrum Guide. So Scrum is talking about you need heterogenic teams. And mostly I read things like, yeah, you shouldn't split testing and programming, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the heterogenic, the diversion should be also internalized in the character traits. So I see so much potential in mixing up a different set of characters. And so I think it's also very important to do recruitment on a peer level and not by one external person or even too few person, because that's so relevant that you have a good mix of character, like Joshua said before.
There's one point to it, and that's what I think Joshua said now about self-awareness. And I think that works when the people are aware of themselves in order to be able to interact and communicate with the others about your own needs and the needs of the others. I think that's a precondition.
I guess what? That's me, and that's what I can do best to help our team to achieve marvelous things. So if everyone would be so aware to speak out this point, that could really help out groups a lot. And I think this, we're not there yet, I think. But I think we are very, very much ahead of the time is now 1.5 hour. But I like it.
Ooh.
Yeah, so maybe it is time before we start talking in circles. If to wrap up our discussion, maybe I would just ask you guys, do you have any key takeaways or something that you would add to the discussion before we come to an end?
Yeah, my takeaway from our discussion now is that for me the key aspect is self-awareness, and I see that those models looking at introvert and extrovert or other schemes help me tremendously, and still it's this feelings and needs which are the base of that. So that is what I need to explore and what I need to be aware of the others in order to be able to find a way where everyone can be in their own ego, and with that forming a team which is efficient and effective.
Chris?
Yes, I'm still hanging on to the things I learned from Riemann while sitting at the beach. his talk about this balance, and I this was so often I heard this in our discussions, is really defending myself and being authentic, really defending my ego in a way, but on the same level, open up. And I think finding this balance, this struggling for balancing these appearing opposites, that's still my key takeaway. And I invite everyone who listens to strive for this higher goal.
Thank you. I think that I'm with you, Marcus. I think it's that lifelong mission to uncover who I am. But it's also what I've learned through just working with you guys and being in this group. It's really it's also about relationships, and I think that gives me meaning. Being able to work with you and your guys' acceptance of who I am that makes this project you know, really exciting for me to do. So thank you guys for being here and supporting me and being able to, yeah, do this cool project.
Yeah. Amen. Okay. I think it's a wrap.
Yeah, cool.
Thanks. Thanks. That was a big joyride for me. So I hope this term wasn't a false friend. Yeah. How I think joyride has something to do with car theft, right? I'm not sure on that.
Okay.
But it was a joyful experience to have this nice summer evening with you. I wanted to say that also. And yeah. We will have an aftermatch with a dear friend of mine. Her name is Melanie. She's a psychological consultant. We were now in this episode talking a lot about psych models. Many of the persons we cited had this background or going in that direction. And so we thought it would be nice to just show this episode to someone coming from this field or having depth knowledge of this field and hear her feedback or her understandings and getting in contact in discussion with her. So we are very much looking forward to talk with Melanie. Yeah. So
that will be cool.
The final words, Marcus.
Yeah. So, dear listeners, if you have some ideas to tell us or talk about, please give us feedback on our page. There's the possibility to be in contact with us, and we are curious about your thoughts.
Yes. Okay.
www.dailyofthemonth.de. Yeah.
Great.
That's it.
That's a take. Good night.
Good night. Take care.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
What kind of English was that?
It's brokish.